WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
Hello and good Sunday evening to everyone listening. This is Pulse of the Nation, the podcast where we discuss the latest political news and election analysis of the past week. I am Braden Vick, your host for this podcast, and in today's episode, I will be discussing the 2024 presidential race, as I promised on yesterday's episode about Tennessee 3. If you haven't watched that, go watch it. It's a very interesting story, very compelling story, with some potentially interesting implications down the road for Tennessee politics. Now, today I promised, of course, discussing the 2024 presidential race. There is quite a bit to get into, so I will go through the what I believe to be sort of the least, I wouldn't say least interesting primary, but sort of the least active primary, which is the Democratic Party primary. You'll probably understand that because the incumbent president is a Democrat. We'll get through that, then we'll get through whatever's happening with the No Labels Pack, and then we'll get to the pretty crowded, at this point, Republican primary. So the Democratic Party primary, there are four candidates that are currently running that have declared their candidacy. The first of these is Jerome Segal. He is a socialist. He is the founder of the Bread and Roses Party, a socialist party in Maryland. And his reason for running is that he was angry about the Biden administration's policy in regards to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which I won't get into here because I would be here all day. It is very complex, very complicated. It deals with allegations of Israeli apartheid against the Palestinian people, you know, accusations of, you know, terrorism by Israel and by America against Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and a bunch of other groups, but essentially angry about, essentially Mr. Segal is angry about the Biden administration's position in regards to that situation. Jerome Segal, for what it's worth, is dead on arrival. No chance he is getting the Democratic presidential nomination. And that is essentially true for the rest of these candidates that aren't named Joe Biden, but we'll get to that later. The next candidate, and the most serious of these candidates, is Marianne Williamson. I say most serious because she has positioned herself as a primary, you know, challenger from the left to President Joe Biden, and she was a former 2020 presidential candidate who made waves when, at a presidential debate, Marianne Williamson said the first thing she'd do if she was president was call former New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and tell her, girl, you're so on. I am not making this up. That is something I will be saying a lot going into the discussion of the 2024 presidential primary. So she's a best-selling author. She's the founder of Project Angel Food, which essentially tries to deliver free meals in Los Angeles County, particularly Metro LA, in the city of Los Angeles, to people who are too sick to cook or to drive out to get food. Delivering essentially free meals to those who are too sick to cook or get their own meals. She is commonly known as the Orb Lady because she's quite invested in essentially the healing power of crystals, and essentially that's kind of what she's known as, and the fact that she is the most serious threat to a Biden candidacy probably shows that the next two candidates, oh wow, the first one of these is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And if that name rings a bell, he is a son, is one of the sons of former U.S. Senator Robert F. Kennedy, who was shot and killed during his own 1968 presidential primary. And RFK Jr., he is an environmental lawyer. But that's not what he's most known for. He's most known for thinking that vaccines cause autism. Yes, people still hold those beliefs from the Andrew Wakefield days. No, I have no idea why. No, I have no idea why Robert F. Kennedy Jr. thinks he can win a Democratic presidential primary with those politics. Like, just him being anti-vax in the in the aftermath of COVID is going to essentially put him on a dead-on-arrival list with Jerome Segal and a lot of other candidates. And the last Democratic candidate that filed, I believe this man, you're not going to believe this when I say his name, but he filed on Tuesday. And the man who filed to run for president on the Democratic Party side is Joe Exotic. Yes, you are hearing me correctly. A couple of days ago, Joe Exotic, that guy, the Tiger King, filed to run in the 2024 presidential primary as a Democrat, campaigning on abortion rights and gun reform. You cannot make this up. What's especially interesting is that he has prior electoral experience in a way, because it was in 2018, I remember, he ran as one of three candidates for the Libertarian nomination for the governor of Oklahoma. Joe Exotic, of course, finished third, but he did end up winning a few counties along the way. I mean, essentially his campaign manager wrote Joe Exotic's policy for him, but good lord, a debate stage with Marianne Williamson, RFK Jr., and Joe Exotic, that has meme potential for days. None of these four candidates are going to get the nomination, especially because who is likely to run is the incumbent president, Joe Biden. His situation is essentially, if he announces his campaign for re-election, he's in. Unless he has some sort of health condition that forbids him from running, or thinking morbidly, or he dies. In which case, the nomination would likely go to his vice president, Kamala Harris. She would be the first black woman to be nominated for president by a major party, and all that good stuff. So if Joe Biden runs, he's in. There are four candidates who are absolute no-hopers, running from a semi-serious to the orb lady, to a guy who's anti-vax, to the Tiger King. That is the state of the Democratic presidential primary. It has the potential to be one of the most hilarious presidential contests we've seen in a while. So that's the Democratic Party side of things. But before we get to the Republicans, there's some weirdness going on. And that's from the No Labels PAC. Essentially, it is a centrist PAC that, you know, tries to be bipartisan, doesn't want to take sides, and has been really vocal about trying to run a candidate for president because they believe that a centrist candidate could win the Electoral College, not just that, but win it in a landslide. If you've seen their the map that they posted, it is absolutely hilarious, in my own opinion. These aren't the opinions of WVUA or these do not reflect the opinions of WVUA staff. These are only my opinions, but the map that they posted, they said, "No labels ticket is not a spoiler, it's a winner," trying to respond to accusations from Democrats saying no labels ticket would essentially be a spoiler in helping Republicans win. But there are two funny things. Not only does No Labels think that Donald Trump would win a presidential election against Joe Biden by flipping the states of Wisconsin, Georgia, and Michigan, I will explain why that's hilarious in a moment and why it's absolutely farcical, but apparently a No Labels ticket would have the potential, according to No Labels, to win 408 electoral votes, including the Republican states of North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, and Nebraska, and the Democratic states of New York, Vermont, and Massachusetts. Oh, wow. Apparently, they have been sort of, they have been contacting a few people to run on their ticket, including Senator Joe Manchin, a conservative Democrat from West Virginia, who, by all intents and purposes, is expected to run for re-election to the Senate for his Senate seat in what many view as a doomed Senate campaign, considering that this is in a presidential cycle in a Trump by 40 state, and states don't exactly split their tickets by 40 points anymore, if you get my drift. I have no idea if he's going to run for re-election, if he's going to try and take the governor's position in West Virginia, or if he runs on a no-labels ticket. Personally, I don't think he does. The other two names that have been floated around who would head the ticket are independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, who recently switched her party affiliations from the Democratic Party, who is not exactly well-liked among the Democratic base or Democratic activists or mainly anybody who is a Democrat, especially considering her party switch and especially considering her penchant to be in opposition to some of Joe Biden's agenda in the first half of Joe Biden's presidency. There is also Joe Lieberman, who is a former senator from Connecticut, a former vice presidential nominee of Al Gore's in 2000. I honestly don't know what political affiliation Joe Lieberman is. Like, he's been a Democrat. He's run his own party for a Senate campaign and won. I believe that was in 2002. Like, it was Connecticut for Lieberman or something silly like that. But the No Labels PAC is trying to essentially run their own party. I believe they have ballot access in the state of Arizona, I believe, or it was in some other state. They're trying to get ballot access. They're trying to actually prop up a presidential campaign. No idea if that's going to go anywhere, but it could provide a very interesting wrinkle in the presidential race if that ever comes to fruition. Now let's go to the granddaddy of all the 2024 primaries, and it is the GOP primary. So we're going to go by people who are running, people who are going to run, people who are likely to run, and people who might run. So let's just start out with the front runner for the GOP nomination, who is running, and that's former President Donald Trump. Chances are you've probably heard of this guy by now. I mean, he is a former businessman. I mean, Trump Organization. I mean, I think a lot of people know about him. Essentially, he's winning unless he dies. That he's in a similar position to President Biden. If he's running for the nomination, he's going to get it. And I will explain why later when I'm going into the likely to run category. But that's not now. What's now is the other three, or I guess other seven candidates who are running. Three of them are actually relevant. The first one of these is former Governor Nikki Haley. She's former governor of South Carolina, former UN ambassador. And my feelings on her campaign is that she's a decade too late. Like, her campaign launch, I watched her campaign launch, and it touched on themes that would have definitely fit in the 2012 presidential race. Problem is, this is 2024, and this iteration of the Republican Party and the Republican base is not exactly going to be friendly to a candidate like Nikki Haley. That Nikki Haley does touch on some interesting stuff. She does correctly point out that the GOP has only won the popular vote once in the past 20 years, and that was in 2004 when George W. Bush defeated Massachusetts Senator John Kerry. And even then, that was only narrowly in the Electoral College, especially with George Bush's narrow victory in Ohio. But it's an interesting point, but Nikki Haley is not going to be president because Donald Trump is running and her campaign is not suited to the modern Republican base. However, there has been speculation that she may be trying to parlay this presidential run into being the vice presidential choice of Donald Trump. Because, if you haven't heard, Donald Trump is not going to be picking Mike Pence as his running mate again in 2024. And we'll get to the former vice president later. I did discuss Ohio once in the 2004 race. Well, speaking of Ohio, we have a businessman, a 39-year-old businessman named Vivek Ramaswamy. And he is a very interesting candidate, even though he, like I think every other Republican nominee, is a no-hoper. It's very interesting because he is a businessman. He's not a politician, so he can occupy the Trump wing that way. And he can occupy the sort of culture warrior wing as well because he's run on being anti-woke, anti-DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, anti-ESG, which is essentially DEI for banks. Just basically any culture war that you can get your hands on in the GOP, he is. Any social conservative issue, Mr. Ramaswamy is hitting it. And he's finding a niche within the Republican Party. He's got on Tucker Carlson a lot, got on Fox News a lot. And he's doing pretty well for a political nobody. Like, I mean, he's getting a somewhat decent base of support in New Hampshire, and he's drawing comparisons to Andrew Yang's campaign in 2020. Andrew Yang's a political nobody, he's a businessman, but he appeals to a surprisingly large subsect of his own party. Andrew Yang parlayed that into an unsuccessful bid for New York City's mayorship in, I believe that was 2021, which was ultimately won by conservative Black Democrat Eric Adams. But it will be interesting to see where Mr. Ramaswamy goes from here. Like, is he going to angle for a top role in a Trump administration come 2025? Should Donald Trump or any other GOP nominee for that matter win? Is he angling for a vice presidential nomination? Who knows? But, I mean, if either Mr. Ramaswamy or Governor Haley end up winning the GOP nomination somehow, they would become the first presidential nominee of any party to be of Indian descent. So that could be history in the making there. But moving on from Mr. Ramaswamy, we have former Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas. He was governor up until 2023 when he was succeeded by Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And the thing with Asa Hutchinson is that he is running as an anti-Trump candidate. He's called on Donald Trump to resign over the 34 felony charges that Trump has gotten from essentially business fraud and, you know, paying hush money to Stormy Daniels and all that sort of stuff. But the problem with Asa Hutchinson running as an anti-Trump conservative is he's running as an anti-Trump candidate. In the modern Republican Party, that is not going to fly. Asa Hutchinson is dead on arrival. I'm not even sure he makes it to South Carolina. That's how dead his campaign is going to be. But he's not the candidate with the least hope, because there are four other GOP candidates that are running for the GOP nomination. The first of these is John Castro. Who? Who? Like, he's from Texas. He's a political newcomer. Hey, good God. Next up is Perry Johnson. And for a lot of these candidates, you might be asking, who? Well, at least we know a little bit about Perry Johnson, because he was kicked off the ballot. He was running in the Michigan gubernatorial GOP primary that was ultimately won by Tudor Dixon. He was trying to run in that primary, and he got kicked off the ballot for not having enough ballot signatures. Moving on to the next no-hoper, and that is Steve Laffey. He was a mayor at Cranston, Rhode Island during the mid-2000s. And the only thing that's interesting about his candidacy is that he is former mayor of Cranston, Rhode Island. And for those of you who are plugged into politics, there's another former mayor of Cranston, Rhode Island that had political aspirations in the state of Rhode Island. That was Alan Fung, who was seen as a potential sleeper flip candidate for Rhode Island's 2nd Congressional District, which is essentially the western, like, three-fourths of Rhode Island, including parts of the city of Providence. And Alan Fung ultimately ended up losing by around 4 points to Seth Magaziner. Like, Alan Fung is a liberal Republican. He did tie himself closely to, now Speaker Kevin McCarthy, and Alan Fung was probably ultimately defeated because of backlash related to Dobbs versus Jackson himself and the whole abortion thing as well. But I want to ask, what is it with former mayors of Cranston, Rhode Island having inflated political ambitions? You see it with Alan Fung, now you see it with Steve Laffey. Steve Laffey is probably not even going to make the ballot in Iowa. And neither is Corey Stapleton, who was actually, I believe, the first Republican nominee to announce their candidacy for president. He is a former Montana Secretary of State from 2017 to 2021. Yeah. If you're a fan of any of those candidates, pray for them, because they're going to need it. But there is the ninth candidate that is going to run, that has filed an exploratory committee just, I believe, yesterday. And it was either yesterday or today at the time of recording. And that was Senator Tim Scott. A senator from, he is a Black Republican senator from South Carolina. He would, if nominated, he would only be the second black presidential nominee of a major party, the first black nominee of the Republican Party for president. They formed an exploratory committee, and the reason why I think he's dead on arrival, not just because of, well, Donald Trump is running, is because Senator Tim Scott has been waffling on abortion. He said he tried to dodge the abortion questions, then later said he would support a 20-week federal abortion ban. Given the fact that most Republicans, I would have to imagine, want much more restrictive abortion bans like the one discussed in Florida in a Saturday's episode, let's be completely honest, Tim Scott has no chance of getting past the GOP primary, especially with those comments. That's essentially putting a nail in the coffin of a campaign in its infancy. But he's not going to be the last of the candidates to announce their runs. There are a lot of potential GOP names that could run the presidential primary. The first of these is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has mentioned as having supported the 6-week abortion ban. He's likely to sign it into law any day now. And I have thoughts on Governor Ron DeSantis. And they essentially boil down to, he ain't got the juice for it. He ain't got that dog in him. And what I mean by that is that in the modern Republican Party I've seen, you need to be an attack dog. You need to be able to go on that attack ruthlessly. You need to be able to be essentially a strong man, macho for the GOP base, but also be willing to attack your political opponents. Donald Trump made a habit of this in 2016, the presidential primaries. And with that, and essentially just quote-unquote telling it how it is, Trump was able to parlay that into being the 45th president of the United States. Ron DeSantis is not like that. He has refused to attack any Republican, including President Donald Trump, even in the aftermath of Trump's indictments and, you know, going to Manhattan to face those 34 felony charges. And Ron DeSantis, man, look, if you ever hear him speak, that is another reason why I don't think he will become the GOP nominee for president. Because any politician who has that voice and who speaks like that, I'm sorry, you're not getting past the GOP primary with that voice. Donald Trump is going to relentlessly mock you for it. I mean, especially because Trump has thrown out quite a few nicknames at his potential Republican primary opponent, calling him Ron DeSanctimonious, calling him Meatball Ron. And the funny thing is that it's not exactly the Trump-supporting base that has tried to build upon this. It has been liberals, especially liberals online, like I've seen on Twitter, that have tried to expand upon this, that have used Meatball Ron, that, you know, when they look at poll numbers from a lot of polls, which has Trump up big in Iowa, up in New Hampshire, up nationally, where Donald Trump is rising and Ron DeSantis is faltering, you know, insults are thrown out like the meatball is cooked. And I wouldn't go so far as to call Ron DeSantis cooked. I wouldn't go so far as to call him a meatball, of course. But the odds aren't looking good for Ron DeSantis. There's even speculation that he may sit out of this race because, you know, his standing is faltering within the presidential primary. Like, there was a report from Time Magazine that, you know, stated that Byron Donalds, Representative Byron Donalds, who was a major backer of Ron DeSantis, endorsed Donald Trump over Ron DeSantis, which is a huge get for for Donald Trump. And also Representative Corey Mills, a freshman Republican representative, was the fourth GOP congressman to endorse Donald Trump. There are two other GOP endorsers. There's freshman Representative Anna Paulina Luna. There's also Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida, who is a colorful figure in his own right. Anna Paulina Luna is a colorful figure in her own right as well. That can be discussed in a future episode, potentially. Time Magazine actually reported, we'll go back to Time Magazine, they reported that there was a host of other GOP congressmen and women who were going to endorse Donald Trump, and they included, quote, Kat Kamick, Brian Mast, Vern Buchanan, and Greg Stoop. And reportedly, Ron DeSantis' campaign was making calls to these representatives, urging them not to endorse Donald Trump. Essentially, I mean, I don't think they did this, but essentially begging on their hands and knees for these congressmen not to endorse, you know, former President Trump, because that would further hurt Ron DeSantis' essentially shadow campaign. Because he's been shadow campaigning for the presidency for months. He's just not formally announced yet. The question is, with him faltering, with him trailing Donald Trump by over 40 points on a recent Massachusetts poll, Trump getting 59%, Ron DeSantis getting 18%, question does he run for president to run a campaign that many people see as doomed, both on the right and the left? Who knows? We'll just have to see in the next couple of months whether a Ron DeSantis campaign comes to fruition. It has been assumed he's running for president, but does he officially can't file the FEC papers? Does he officially announce his candidacy? That's becoming more doubtful by the week. Speaking of people affiliated with the Trump administration, the next candidate that I am going to highlight is former Vice President Mike Pence. Now, many people here around UA will know him because he went and spoke in Tuscaloosa at this university on Tuesday, less than a week ago. Essentially what I see as sort of a pre-campaign stop, because I believe is pre-nakedly going to try to run for president. Essentially, when Donald Trump rejected the idea of president, the Vice President Pence accompanying him on the presidential ticket again. Like, the assumption is that Mike Pence is running for president. Mike Pence, before he was the vice president, he was the governor of Indiana. He is part of the reason why there were protests is that he was criticized over his dealing with an AIDS crisis in Indiana in 2015. As well, of course, as the title of the speech, which was sponsored by UA's YAF chapter, the Young Americans for Freedom. The title was Saving America from the Woke Left. And I get that Mike Pence is an old-school Christian conservative, but with that title, that pretty clearly indicates, to me at least, I mean, that's my opinion, that it clearly indicates that he is angling towards running for president. He's expected to make a decision in the next couple of months about that anyways, so I would be shocked if he doesn't run for president. The same Massachusetts poll that I just discussed had Pence in third place at 10%. Clearly there is a lane for former Vice President Pence to run in, but do I think he gets the nod over the former president of the United States, his former boss? Not a hope. There would be more chance of a blind squirrel getting that than Vice President Pence at this point, because let's be honest, it's just not going to happen. Another person I think is likely going to run is former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He's a former elected official in Kansas, and no, it's not going to happen for Mike Pompeo. If he runs for president, he may have a surprisingly strong finish in Iowa, make it fourth or fifth, but oh, no, he's not going to get the nomination. Another person who is likely to run, who has expressed that they are probably going to run, is John Bolton. He's a former national security advisor during the Trump administration. He is best known for having the war stash, essentially. And he's trying to run, I think, like sort of like in the anti-Trump lane, like the neoconservative, like national security conservative lane. That is not going to fly in today's Republican Party. He also has the same chance as a blind squirrel of becoming the nominee for GOP president. But there are several others with the same chances as Pompeo, Bolton, and the others discuss. And these are sort of the maybe category, where there are rumors that they might run for president, and they might not, they might. The first of these is Chris Sununu. He is the moderate governor of New Hampshire. It's been speculated for months that, you know, he's not going to run for election and that he is going to run try to run for president, especially angling himself as a defender of New Hampshire values, a defender of New Hampshire's First in the Nation primary, which, you know, that got a lot of backlash from New Hampshire after the Democratic Party rearranged the primary calendar to have New Hampshire not be the first primary in the nation. Chris Sununu has been waffling about for months about whether he's going to run for president. The likelihood is that he will, but he's not going to win, like, at all. Maybe he gets second place in New Hampshire, or maybe he slumps to, like, a fourth or fifth place finish, which I think might be more likely. But he's not the only governor named Chris that could run for president, because the former governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, might also run. He was the candidate for the GOP nomination in 2016, and he's most famous for Bridgegate and being a meme because of it. Like, Chris Christie, are you kidding me? Or bringing up this guy to run for president? Like, are you kidding me? Speaking of governors, there's a lot of governors that have been rumored to, former governors that have been rumored to run for president. The next one of these is Glenn Youngkin. The only reason why he's been rumored to run for president is because he won a by 10 state in 2021. Like, in the wake of all this backlash against Terry McAuliffe, the sort of pro-GOP wave that was being rode by the GOP as a result, not just of backlash in regards to education, but also because of Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan, which was not popular at that time whatsoever, especially because it was getting panned by the media every 3 hours. So, and Glenn Youngkin was able to ride that to victory. Him winning a by 10 state, he's essentially gained worship status amongst some Republicans, the sort of elected bros who are wanting more than anything to get a Republican elected to the White House in 2024 and don't think Donald Trump is their best bet. They've approached Glenn Youngkin to run. He's not ruled out, but I'm not sure he does. Like, the thing is that Virginia has weird rules where a governor cannot serve consecutive terms, so Glenn Youngkin's not eligible for re-election in 2025 anyways. But a big test for him will be, he will be trying to give Republicans a statewide trifecta, because I believe Republicans, they have control of one, I believe they may have control of the state house, but don't have control of the state senate, or maybe the other way around. I don't know, but Glenn Youngkin will be trying to have that. Democrats will be looking to rebound from a terrible 2021 in the 2023 elections to see if they can't get majorities in the state house, in the state senate, and potentially thwart Governor Youngkin's agenda. So I think he has to be more concerned with statewide issues than trying to run for president. I think it's about a 30% chance he runs for president, but in the end, I don't think he will, especially because he'd be DOA anyways. But he's, of course, not the weirdest guy to flirt with running for president, because Francis Suarez, the mayor of Miami, has openly hinted that, you know, he would potentially like to take a stab at the 2024 presidential race. He would position himself as essentially a center-right candidate. But the funny thing is that Francis Suarez voted against Ron DeSantis and for Andrew Gillum in that closely contested gubernatorial race in Florida in 2018, voted for the Democrat over the Republican governor of the state, and he also did not vote for Donald Trump in the 2020 presidential race against Joe Biden, even though both Suarez and Trump are Republicans. The other weird thing about Francis Suarez is that he's really into cryptocurrency. He's tried to make Miami a crypto hub. You definitely heard a lot from that in 2021 and 2022. Not so much in the past several months, considering everything that's happened with Sam Bankman-Fried. But because, you know, he did not vote for Trump, because he voted against DeSantis, what lane would Francis Suarez even have? That I do not know. Speaking of people with no hope for becoming president of the United States, Doug Burgum has been rumored to run for president. I have no idea why. He's more of an establishment conservative. He'll position himself on the center-right, the governor of North Dakota. But why? Why is this guy being rumored to run for president? Is it because he went to Iowa? Like, he did go to Iowa, so He definitely is flirting with the idea. I don't know why. Same thing with Will Hur, the former representative from Texas' 23rd Congressional District, which spans areas east of El Paso to the San Antonio suburbs and the border areas in between. He went to New Hampshire in January. Apparently, he's mulling running for president as well. What lane would he occupy in today's Republican Party? No, is my answer to that, but... Now you have his name being floated around as well, and also Kristi Noem, who is the governor of South Dakota. She hasn't ruled out running for president. She's probably not going to run for president, like from her statements and whatnot, but she hasn't officially ruled it out just yet. But she's probably angling to get the vice presidential nomination should Donald Trump win the primary. And just to segue off of that a little bit before we get into the final nomination candidate, potential candidate, the vice presidential race is really interesting, of course, because Mike Pence is not going to be in it because Trump rejected Mike Pence. So reports have indicated that Trump wants a woman to be his vice president. And so there are four major candidates running for that. You have far-right U.S. House Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia's 14th Congressional District, Northwest Georgia. She is seen as a favorite for it, as is Carrie Lake, the former GOP gubernatorial nominee in Arizona, who, when she lost by less than 1% in 2022, claimed that it was a rigged election despite, you know, there being a very pro-GOP turnout environment in the state of Arizona. Like, I don't think you can scream stolen election when you somehow manage to lose Arizona in a down-ballot race in a pro-GOP environment. I mean, that is to say nothing of Mark Fincham and Blake Masters. That's another topic entirely, though. But Carrie Lake's one of the favorites as well, especially because she did echoes claims of a stolen election like Trump did in 2020. There's also Tulsi Gabbard, who is a regular on Fox News. I think one time she actually guest hosted Tucker Carlson's show. She's a former Democratic representative who made a switch to, I don't think she's officially made a switch to the Republican Party, but she's essentially been occupying a lot of that sort of like social conservative culture war type of stuff. And she could be seen as a popular pick, potentially an olive branch to independents and, you know, more disaffected types who don't believe either party speaks through them. And there is also Nikki Haley, who is running for president, as I said, could be angling into a vice presidential run. And I lied, there's five potential candidates. There's Kristi Noem as well, who could be angling to get into frontrunner status for the vice presidential nominee. Then there's one other candidate that I want to mention before I end this episode. It's dragging on a little bit, and that's Liz Cheney, the former U.S. House representative from Wyoming who got destroyed in the 2022 primary against current Representative Harriet Hageman in essentially the same margin that Republicans usually beat Democrats by. Like, I saw something from Believable Sabbath's Crystal Ball. Or was it Split Ticket, which essentially said that the Hageman-Cheney race was essentially a GOP versus Democratic race because, you know, all the Democrats in Wyoming changed their registration to Republican to vote for Cheney, and all the actual Republicans voted for Harriet Hageman because she is a pro-Trump conservative, and Liz Cheney was one of the co-chairs of the committee on January 6th. Which recommended, which investigated, Trump's involvement with the January 6th protests and riots, which tried to essentially install Donald Trump as the unelected president of the United States. Liz Cheney is essentially been disowned by the Republican Party for her actions, and she's been included in a lot of presidential polling as well. I don't know whether she runs, though, but she's been rumored as a potential candidate as well. So what do I think of the 2024 race now that we've gone through every potential candidate? I think the race, unless there is some untimely health condition or event or death, it is going to be a redux of 2020, Joe Biden, the incumbent president, versus Donald Trump, the former president. And what do I think the electoral map will look like in 2024, at least presidentially? I think it's going to favor Democrats because it's not impossible for Republicans to get 270 electoral votes. But to get 270 electoral votes, it is a tough climb to get because if you take a look at Wisconsin, you know, last week in the first episode of Pulse of the Nation, the first topic I covered was the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, which, you know, the liberal judicial candidate Janet Bercevich won by 11 points over, you know, former Supreme Court Justice, you know, Daniel Kelly, you know, giving liberals a majority on the court. You know, that could have impacts for gerrymandering, redistricting, and whatnot. But Wisconsin was one of the closest states of 2020. Joe Biden won it by like 0.6 percentage points. So you think like it wouldn't take that much for Republicans to win, but you have to wonder, like, are the Republicans going to make inroads in rural Wisconsin? And if so, is that going to outweigh the swings that Democrats are getting, not just in net votes in Madison, but swings in the Milwaukee area, especially in the aforementioned Wild counties, you know, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington? Like, can the Republicans find that balance? Like, I'm not sure they can. Like, I rate that as lean Democratic. Michigan, I'm sorry, given what happened in 2022, given the midterm results there, I'm sorry. That state, I believe, is likely Democratic. 2016, Trump winning Michigan, I think that was an aberration. Michigan looks more and more like a solidly Democratic state by the year. I don't expect that to change in 2024. Then you have to take a look at Arizona. And, like, again, if Carrie Lake couldn't win Arizona, if Abe Hamadeh, the Secretary of State nominee for the Republicans, if he couldn't win Arizona, then what chance does Donald Trump have? I mean, there's a chance, but he's not favored in Arizona, I don't think, especially in a state that despises the modern GOP and its hatred of the late Senator John McCain. So, like, that state's probably not going to be favored for the Republicans. Neither is Georgia. Like, even though they re-elected their GOP governor by 8 points, Senator Raphael Warnock won re-election ultimately by, you know, around 3 points over, you know, former football star Herschel Walker. And given the trends of the Atlanta Metro, given the leftward trends of, you know, other cities like Columbus and Savannah and Macon and Albany, for example, as well as Athens. Like, again, Republicans could win in Georgia, but that would require shifts to the right in North Georgia, shifts to the right in, you know, South Georgia, Middle Georgia, and especially a lot of these rural communities, enough to stop the bleeding in Atlanta, which the bleeding in Atlanta is severe for the Republican Party. If you take a look at the Atlanta Metro from 2012 to 2020 by presidential results, it is stark, especially in the southern parts of the Metro, as southern parts have gotten more diverse, they have gotten blacker, especially, you know, in Rockdale County, in Newton, in Henry, in Douglas, in Fayette counties. Just take a look at those results and you'll see what I'm talking about. Even in Cobb and Gwinnett counties, they've gotten more diverse. And even in Forsyth County, which has a very large Asian American population, particularly those of Indian descent, which I found really interesting and possibly also contributing to the leftward shift of that part of the Atlanta Metro. Not to mention Fulton, DeKalb, and Clayton counties themselves, which are seen as the core three counties of the Atlanta Metro itself. So Republicans aren't favored there. And they aren't favored in Pennsylvania either because, you know, Josh Shapiro just won by like well over 15 points over GOP nominee Doug Mastriano in the gubernatorial race. John Fetterman defeated Dr. Oz by 5 points, as I previously mentioned out of this episode, the last episode, I think it was, when I mentioned the it was 2 episodes ago when I mentioned the news of the week, just trying to remember what was going on. But, you know, Fetterman beat Oz by 5 points in Pennsylvania, a state that went nearly for Joe Biden. Looking at the granular trends, like especially in Allegheny County, the Philadelphia Metro, like, do Republicans get enough rural swings to counteract that enough to win the state? I don't know. So right now, I think Joe Biden is a favorite for re-election. Obviously, you can't count out Donald Trump, though. I mean, a lot of people did in 2016. And look how that turned out. Donald Trump won 306 electoral votes. So stranger things have happened in politics. But right now, President Biden isn't a lock, but he is a solid favorite for re-election as of right now. But that's it for episode 4 of Pulse of the Nation. Tune in next Friday for episode 5. I promise you, it's going to be a good one. We're looking at the news of the next upcoming week, and if it's as hectic as what has happened this week, it is going to be a very, 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 very chaotic and full week of political news. Thank you, have a great rest of the weekend, and have a great week. Good night.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.